Hi, I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm H. Claire Taylor. Have you struggled to keep up with the fast-changing world of self-publishing?
Do you want to learn the latest news, tips, and tactics to help you sell more books now and into the future?
Welcome to the Sell More Books Show, a weekly podcast that gives you all the info you need to know in under an hour.
To save you time, give you motivation, and boost your publishing profit.
Enough waffling. Let's get started.
Okay, Claire, on with the show. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Sell More Book Show, episode 344. I'm Brian Cohen from Best Page Forward and Amazon Ad School, joined by H. Claire Taylor of FFS Media. So, Claire, nothing interesting happened in the world, in world news, yesterday, because we record this ahead of time, yesterday. So there's no need to talk about it, and I'm glad everything worked out for everybody.
Yep. In the end, we were all winners.
In the end, didn't see that coming. No. But we will be talking about self-publishing news. Claire, I didn't say we were going to say anything about this, but you and I are going to do a webinar.
We are. I'm very excited.
It's going to be super cool. It's going to be on Thursday, the 12th of November at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And you're going to be like in the driver's seat talking about writing craft, which is super cool.
You know, I'm excited about that.
I just love, like, we have fun talking about a variety of self-publishing and marketing subjects here. But like, when I saw you talk during the self-publishing live event, I was like, oh yeah, she likes this. This is cool. So it's going to be a ton of fun. Are you excited to talk to like 11 people? I was going to say 110 billion, but
yes, 11. Give me okay. As big of an audience as I can get to talk about story. Okay. And I'm in.
Good. Awesome. And we'll have links as soon as they're available for that. And that's like the big news on my side involves you. Do you have anything else you want to chat about at this time?
No, I think that's the biggest news there is right now.
The biggest, that's all there is.
Top story of the world.
There's nothing else. So we'll just go with that. And let's go straight into the show. We have a winner of my book, How to Write a Sizzling Synopsis, and your future book to be named later in this trade. And that winner is Lisa M. Lilly, longtime fan and friend of the show. So Lisa, just reach out to me at brian@sellingforauthors.com, claim your prize, and we'll start making a list
of
everyone that gets to be a wonderful ARC reader for your book when that's ready.
Yeah, I'm going to start talking about my progress in terms of weeks. How many weeks along I am. Maybe I'll have a genre reveal party later on.
Okay, but keep it safe. Keep it no pyrotechnics during your genre reveal party.
Agreed.
I actually really like the idea of a genre reveal party now that you mentioned it. All right. Featured patrons. We have Love's Current by Liberty Nell Pennington. She's protecting her home. He's hellbent on progress. Can they navigate the rapids of love? If you like strong heroines, hunky heartthrobs, and breathtaking scenery, then you'll adore Liberty Nell Pennington's heartwarming tale, the Rapids of Love, Claire.
I like hunky heartthrobs.
Yeah.
This book is
for
me.
Who doesn't? Yeah. Well, you can pick up Love's Current. The link is on somewherebookshow.com. Why don't you go into number two?
Okay, we have Sarah's Inheritance by Katherine Kim. Sarah needed a place to start over. Fortunately, her grandmother left Sarah a house in her will. But learning about Gran's secret life and her not-quite-human friends reminds that every fairy tale has monsters lurking in the dark. Sarah must decide if she's ready to accept the rest of what Gran passed down to her, assuming they all survive the next few weeks.
We have Planet Dead One-Shot by Sylvester Barzi. When the world goes to hell in a zombie handbasket, those are really hard to find. You find them on Etsy. You find out that true evil hides among the living. It's 2019. The wall is built. The president is missing, and an unknown virus has quickly taken over the world. people are dying, but like an 80s B-rated horror movie, they won't stay dead for long. If you love Z Nation, Night of the Comet, and Slow Burn, then you'll love this book. I wonder if post-apoc sales are down in 2020.
Especially post-apoc taking place in 2019.
No, 2019, we're like, we would welcome the zombie apocalypse. And oh, we get to trade out 2020 for a zombie apocalypse in 2019.
Who would have thought we were nostalgic? We'd ever be nostalgic about 2019.
I remember someone posting a review on Facebook that's like, angry that a book set in 2020 didn't have a pandemic in it. And it's like, well, the book was written. You can't update it.
I know. I'm working on a series that's currently set like summer of 2018. I'm like book 4 or 5. I don't know if I'm going to add that pandemic in or not.
3 years later.
I will pull one of those.
Dude, time jumps are awesome. I love them. I love me some time jumps. All right. Question of the week was, do we think Audible will change the audiobook return policy? Why or why not? First one to you, Claire.
Connie Bidal said, probably one day they will have to change the policy. Like Roland said, because of a lawsuit. I don't see it happening anytime soon, though. And I do suspect that trad publishers are getting a much different deal on this.
Yeah, I wonder about that. I mean, they might have some kind of returns thing built in. But maybe not. Maybe that gets billed back to Random House or whoever.
Or a Random House.
Or just a random. I keep getting these bills for Audible returns. Darn Random House. Dory H. said, 1, Amazon can afford to run at a loss. 2, Amazon became the behemoth that it is because it always puts consumers first. 3, the only successful action to change Amazon's mind, as far as I know, involved almost 600 booksellers in 27 countries pulling more than 3.5 million titles from a book site when a books owned by Amazon threatened to pull out of the Czech Republic, Hungary, South Korea, and Russia. So on the bright side, it's possible. So if there were a coalition of sorts.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
Nothing more needs to be said. Number 3, on to you.
Randall Floyd said, the short answer to the Audible return policy is yes, it should change. But who knows if they'll actually do anything about it? Not until they start taking a significant hit to their bottom line.
Who knows when, if that will ever happen. So interesting stuff. You can always comment on the question of the week at sellmorebookshow.com. Excitingly, Brittany from my team is now at least trying to comment on many of the comments there if me and Claire do not. So you will get someone paying attention to you.
I jump in sometimes, give people some upvotes.
You're way better than me. You're way better than me. All right. We didn't test this, I'm realizing. So hopefully this will work. Let's do the tips of the week.
And now on the Sell More Book Show, it's the tip of the week.
Tip number 1, underrated reviews. Most authors agree that reviews are important, but one part of Amazon's sales page that many authors still neglect is the editorial reviews. Quote, we conducted a test and found that shoppers do pay attention to editorial reviews, says Kindlepreneur's Dave Chesson. Chesson's test used heat map technology, tracking the eye movements of viewers. It found that shoppers look at editorial reviews if they exist, yet rarely read them. Instead, they skip to the name and qualifier of the reviewer. That's super interesting, such as the website they represent. When it comes to the number, the sweet spot was 6 to 10, less or more, and readers skip the section entirely. Unlike Amazon reviews, editorial reviews are easier to get and have fewer restrictions. So look to other authors in the genre, review blogs and sites, and bookstagrammers. Quote, make the most of the traffic you're already getting by optimizing your editorial reviews, says Chesson. You might be surprised by what it can do to your book sales. I love heat maps.
They're so fun.
Are so cool. For those of you who've never seen one, I mean, go to the page, certainly. We have the link at sellmorebookshow.com. It shows where people are looking with their eyes on your page, which Amazon is never going to share with us. And I've used some heat maps in my webinars for ages because people don't look at the cover, which is super interesting because they already looked at it when they clicked an ad or something. So they don't ever look at the cover. They look at the title. They look at the reviews. They look at the book description. And if they're still scrolling down, here's what they look at next. If you have 6 to 10 of them, your editorial reviews. I don't take full advantage of this. Claire, do you ever use these?
I don't, because they seemed like something that wasn't that important to me. But after reading this article, yeah, I'm going to go scoop up some of these.
Because it's easy to do. Like, some people will take their existing Amazon reviews and use those. But it does seem as though, to maximize Dave's tip here, you do want to try to get some names. Like, for instance, for your Paranormal Cozy pen name, you might want to get Trixie to say something about your book or along those lines, a name people would see and recognize. I've been telling people this for years. What do you think is the first thing you'll do?
Go and ask some author friends who have read my stuff to give me a little editorial review. I am happy to give them in return of the ones that I've read and liked. Obviously, I'm not going to sell out.
Amazon won't get rid of those because it's in editorial reviews. It's not trade for trade. Totally fine with editorial reviews.
Yeah. And it won't be, I wouldn't consider it unethical because I would not leave a review for something I didn't myself like. And I wouldn't ask anyone to do that. But what I really like about this is just that it hones in so much on the qualifiers. It's not even so much the name of the person, it's the qualifier. Stuff like USA Today bestselling author and whatever publication they're at. You know, the person doesn't even have to recognize it. It can be like an author and then you can have their name and then comma author of the whatever series. And it's the author of the whatever series that really gets the person. That's where the heat map is showing that people are focusing. And so it's effective even if they're not familiar with the series. It makes it seem like, oh, I should know this series. And that's enough. Yeah. So yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think so too. And good point on that. I hadn't even really picked up on that. Get some USA Today best-selling superstars. When I launched my first course back in 2016, Selling for Authors, my first module that I put in that course was networking. And to my knowledge, very few people actually did it. But here we are, 4 years later, and the relationships you could have built up in the last 4 years might be the first people you'd get to post an editorial review. So if you haven't started building more relationships, now is the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're up for number two.
Okay. Scheming for streaming. Have you been contacted with an offer to option your book to Netflix? It's a scam, says writer beware. The writerly dream of having one's book translated into a film can make an offer like this very tempting. But if it involves spending money, run away and contact writer beware. Quote, that's not how it works, says Victoria Strauss. This new scam appropriates the name of senior TV and film scout Claire Richardson and involves a complicated and expensive scheme of wire transfers, always a red flag. To protect yourself from scams like these, it's important to learn how things work in the publishing world and always proceed from a point of skepticism. Mistrust and verify and use your common sense. Remember, you can always contact writer beware. Quote, we may have heard something or received complaints. If we have, we'll let you know.
Yeah, unfortunately, too many people get duped by these because these scammers, they know what they're doing. If they're running this scam, they're making a significant amount of money from it. Like, especially if they're like, they have people. It's like the scammer in charge and then under scammers. They have enough people to pay under scammers, then you know they are in. They are making bank, and so they're very good at what they do. And I like the mistrust and verify. Honestly, I don't know if you've experienced this, Claire. Bad behavior has made it more difficult to sell legitimate products because people mistrust. I don't know how many people I had to delete their comments on ads saying scam when I was touting my free challenge. And it's like the opposite of a scam. I don't know what you'd call it, but because there have been so many scams out there, you kind of are forced to up your legitimacy game when you don't have a scam.
Absolutely. And from a consumer perspective, it's always important to be aware of, and I talk about this a lot in just my Enneagram stuff, fears and desires, what your deep fears and your deep desires are, so that when you see someone who's playing to them just a little too accurately, you can go, I should stop and I should think before I act here. Because it is like, I hate to perpetuate this narrative, but if it's too easy, then it's just probably fake. So if you're promising results, if someone's promising you results, then it's probably fake. If someone's promising you like new like skills that you could learn if you put in the effort, or like, you know how, then maybe it's not fake, yeah. Right? Yeah. And so it's like, yeah, I would absolutely love to have one of, you know, some of my IP on Netflix adapted to TV. That would be great. But if someone's like coming to me asking me for money to do it, no, it's not that great.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you will not be approached in some kind of pay for play offer to get your stuff on Netflix or Apple Plus or any of those. That's not how it works.
But even if it did work that way, then you shouldn't do it. Like, right. Even if Netflix was like, yeah, we'll just create like whatever we can get people to pay us for. Like, no, like you should be getting paid for your property, period. Yeah. Scam or not scam, period. Have some standards.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You need standards, scam, anti-scam standards, anti-scanders. That was pretty bad. Let's go on to number three, must read to succeed. If you want to sell books, you need to read book marketing blogs, says book marketing blogger. Oh, I just added that in. Says author Frances Caballo in her post on essential blogs for authors. Good blogs, says Caballo, will keep you up to date on social media, blogging, book marketing, online advertising, and more. And Frances has a very good website, so I feel bad for mocking, but it was pretty funny. Caballo starts her list with show favorites, janefriedman.com, Kindlepreneur, and our Allen's blog, all of which feature regularly updated writing, publishing, and marketing advice for indies and traditionally published authors alike. Other must-reads include the Alliance of Independent Authors, Joel Friedman, and of course, Joanna Penn's thecreativepen.com. Quote, listen to her podcast or read her blog posts. Joanna is never stingy with knowledge. The more you listen to her and her guests, the more you'll learn and the more success you'll have as an author. I will also say, aggregating podcasts of said information could be helpful to listen to as well. Claire, I feel like you and I are in a similar boat where we've gotten to the point where we know what works for us and our books and our products. So we're not necessarily looking to like add a ton. How did book blogs, podcasts, interviews, etc., books on the subject factor into you getting to that point?
Yes, especially books. I mean, the blogs are great. And, you know, when I see a good one pop up sort of in my field of vision through my author mm-hmm. connections or social media or whatever, then I'll go check it out. And that's a nice quick read. But I do like the more in-depth studies of things. So I just read Killing It on Kobo by old Mark Lefebvre. And so I really like to go in deep on that. But that the author awesome. Blogs are great. And I mean, we just gave an example of something that's new information that's really useful with the Kindlepreneur and the heat maps. So
yeah,
I keep an eye out, but at this point I kind of have to put the blinders on at some point.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it, you're doing this show every week. So
this does help, I will say.
Yeah. So basically, if you are not at the point where you have stuff figured out, I would definitely keep doing research, but be willing to pull back like Claire has, like I have. Like I remember I figured out how to do an email marketing, like an email autoresponder sequence. This is an old forum that Simon Whistler of Rocking Self-Publishing fame. I checked in with him recently. He's got a kid now. He's a YouTube sensation. Way to go, Simon Whistler. You graduated from self-publishing education. So basically this forum, Mark Dawson talked about, this was back in 2015, I believe, talked about, hey, here's what I do, guys. And it's like, oh, I'll do a variation on what Mark does. And then I was like, okay, cool. I don't really need to learn much more about automation sequences. And I found since that point, there hasn't been that much more that has changed my mind on that in 5 years. So it was good that I kind of closed up shop on that particular subject, because otherwise I might've wasted a lot of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I find myself getting to that point where I'm just tweaking things constantly, I'm like, okay, you're cut off. Time to go home.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I think we are ready for the news. And I believe you are up with number 5.
It's time for the Sell More Book Show Top 5 News. Number 5.
Bookstop. When it comes to supporting indie bookstores, Bookshop isn't the answer, says Kieran Smith of Blackwell Bookshops. Quote, I understand the attraction, says Smith on LinkedIn, but I don't think it's good for customers and it is not especially good for the industry, end quote. Already businesses have shown that all they need is an online route to market and a way to share the differentiators which make individual booksellers great. Personal knowledge, personality, creativity, and a great product. Indie booksellers are small enough to be personal and to have their own personality, and that is what competes against large, faceless organizations. Quote, my concern about bookshop.org, who I am sure are very well-intentioned, is that they remove the agency and personality which exists within bookselling at the moment. Suddenly, every service is the same. It's an interesting point.
We've talked about Bookshop and we've talked about other attempts for indie bookstores to kind of get into the online space. I think that it's an uphill battle. Going against Amazon for getting online book sales is an uphill battle. This reminds me kind of like of Shopify, because Shopify lets you sell a lot of different things. I think in the last month, using the obvious, like, oh, this is the Shopify store. I've bought coffee, empanadas, and ready-made meals. Like, there's a whole bunch of stuff. Could you buy books off that? Yeah. There's a certain degree of customization. And so you can't always tell unless you're in the know that it's a Shopify store.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know with Bookshop. I haven't seen it enough.
It is pretty generic.
It always looks the same.
Yeah. I mean, it can be hard. At least last time I looked, it can be hard to tell. You kind of have to check what bookstore am I looking at right now? What am I browsing? But I think this raises an interesting
leads to what Kieran says.
Well, I think it's a very interesting point that indie authors can learn from, which is that you don't want to you're not playing the same game as big corporations. You know, you don't want to try and beat TradPub at its own game if you're an indie. You want to really exploit your personality and the things that make you an individual and create sort of your strong persona, which is something that you can do that the trad publishers will not necessarily do for their authors or will not let their authors do. It's hard to get in touch sometimes with traditionally published authors. You know, maybe you can find them on Twitter, but as far as emailing them and just like saying, hey, you can't really do that, but you can do that with indies.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the alternative, let's say I am an indie bookstore owner. I want to sell stuff online. I can either do something relatively painless to set up like Bookshop, or I can figure it out from the ground up or use another product like Shopify. That's hard. It is not easy to learn these things.
Right. And the reason that they need it so bad right now came on pretty quick.
Right. Right. I will tap into the old Kukralism of like, they could have done this. Like, sure, an indie bookstore could have gotten really good at a bookshop type thing years ago when it looked like, hey, maybe Amazon might take some of our sales eventually. But that didn't happen. And so, you know, there wasn't really an online component. And thus, we are in the situation we are in today.
Right. Yeah. I think it's probably a good sort of stepping stone, right? It'll stem some of the bleeding until they can hopefully build up their own more unique storefront.
Yeah. Agreed. Hopefully, indie bookstores can, for the most part, survive this year. I know that some have probably already closed, but hopefully communities can come together and that these stores can facilitate that community support in such a way that they're able to weather the storm. Let's go on to number four.
Number four.
Mailing list mythology. Many authors resist creating email lists because they don't like getting emails themselves and assume others feel the same. That's a mistake and just one of the myths about email marketing Julia Evans writes about in her latest blog post. Quote, I get a lot of unwanted email, and I was worried I'd be the source of unwanted email too, end quote, she says. Another myth is that emailing is adversarial. But the reality is subscribers join your list for a reason. If you send genuinely helpful emails, people will be happy to sign up and receive them. When it comes to content, most readers still haven't seen your best work, especially if they are new to your list. Instead of writing something new each week, pull from your best writing and recycle it. That's something I'm trying to get better at myself. Better yet, create an automation so every new subscriber starts at the beginning. Finally, don't fear the unsubscribes. Those people were just not your target audience. In a related story, Rieva Lisansky of Forbes said that email is the most powerful tool to take your career to the next level, delivering the highest return on investment for all marketing dollars, up to $42 back for every dollar spent. The author notes that if your emails are entertaining, informative, and engaging, you can send as many as you want. I think of marketer Seth Godin, who literally sends an email every single day, and hundreds of thousands of people do not unsubscribe to those daily emails. Lot to unpack here. Claire, did you ever feel this way about email?
Absolutely. I had to forcibly train this out of myself. It's ludicrous because like we're writers and we're like, they don't want to hear from us. They don't want to read what we have to say. No, they absolutely 100% do. That's the whole point. And you know, they probably don't want you to write something that's boring, but right, they want to hear from you. And so it's really like, okay, how can you kind of free that up? And I'm the same way. I don't love emails, but I actually do love emails from the authors that I love. You know, it's not like I'm getting something from Pottery Barn. I know it's going to be personalized and it's going to be entertaining. And that automatically makes it better than 99% of the stuff in my inbox.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I think that what I've learned is if you put a lot of effort into your emails, they will be valuable to you. And when I write like a couple emails, like I batch process them together, sometimes I'll like look at the word count and it'll be like, oh, well, that's over 2,000 words. And you might wonder, well, Brian, you don't write many books anymore. And I'm like, yeah, it's because I'm writing freaking emails and Facebook posts all the time. I put the same amount of effort into those that a lot of people put into their books. And I am seeing a return. It'd be nice if it was $42 for every dollar spent, but I am seeing a positive return on emails and putting in that effort into connecting with people in that medium.
Yeah, the automation helps a lot. I have started to get better about repurposing stuff when I write just a really good email. It may have a few things that are like not evergreen in it. Mm-hmm. So I'll just go and take those out and revamp it a little bit so that it can be evergreen and stick it in, you know, stick it in my automation for when people get onboarded so that they have, you know, another week or two of just funny emails from me and stories so that they're like, oh, this is great. This is a fun place to be. But I do spend a lot of time on my emails. I don't send them out frequently, but I try and send it out monthly to at least my humor list. I do more often on the other stuff, but my humor list gets one about every month. And then sometimes they'll get one every 2 months and I'll say, sorry about last month. I will spend about 4 hours on a single email.
Yeah.
And it's long, but it's a story and it's a good quality story. And I get a lot of responses from it. So, I mean, obviously you don't have to do that. I get like super perfectionist on it, but
you're like an outlier for a 4 hour email, but if it's worth it, it's worth it.
I mean, it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
It makes it fun. And I feel better about sending it like, oh yeah, this is definitely something that my readers would want to hear. You know, it's like personal stories and jokes and that sort of thing.
Yeah. I love that. I think you get out of these things what you put into them. And if you just write, my book's now for sale, click this link. Thanks. Mm-hmm. It will take less time. I will tell you that much, but it may not be as effective. All right, I believe you are up for number three.
Number three.
Hanging by a strand. New York City's famous Strand bookstore is asking for help, says the passive voice. Like many businesses have since March, the Strand's owner has asked fans and loyal customers to spend their money and spread the word to save the store, prompting the question of why the millionaire owner, Nancy Bass Wyden, didn't use her own money to save it. Instead, she put her own personal fortune to work purchasing stock in Amazon, the mortal enemy of brick and mortar booksellers. Bass Wyden said it was a necessary step toward keeping the Strand afloat. Many bookstores are failing to thrive during these times, and Passive Guy suggests the pandemic has accelerated a trend that was already well underway before anyone had even heard about COVID. Throw in some shade. All right.
I know. Boom. Well, what I think from a owner of a store's perspective, like, you certainly don't have to bankrupt yourself to try to save a business. Like, it's okay to be smart with your money if you're worried that your business isn't going to be worth the money that you put back into it. But you also shouldn't necessarily just say, community, save things. I'm going to go buy stock. I don't look at Amazon as the mortal enemy here. I know a lot of people do, but like it is a bad, the optics are bad, as, yes, as people like to say, the optics are definitely bad. I think it's okay to ask your community for support. I'm not always good at that. When I was running an event with Jim years ago, it was like a multi-author event in a Facebook group. And at the beginning of the day, of this big, long day of moderating lots and lots of people, I spilled like a crap ton of water on my laptop and it was dead. And I told Jim, and he's like, I'm going to put together a GoFundMe. And I was like, no, don't do that. And he's like, you know nothing, Jon Snow. And he put it up. And by the end of the day, I had enough money to pay for that laptop. And it was just cool to see the power of the community in action. It's okay to ask for help from a community, but maybe don't do it at the same time that you're doing something that is the opposite.
Exactly. Well, and I think for people listening, it's a good reminder that people want to support you. A lot of the times, like, they don't know that you need support until you ask. or let them know. You know, people just assume businesses are doing fine until they hear, oh, this business is in trouble. And then they're like, oh yeah, you know, if it's a restaurant that you love, oh, this restaurant's in trouble. Well, I haven't eaten there in a while. I would love an excuse to go spend some money there. You know, so it's just about, you can just let people know that you need help. There are probably a lot of people who are out there who want to help you, but we're all very busy and preoccupied with nothing much lately. Just that reminder, it's okay to remind people and let people know, because otherwise they won't. And they might be very sad if, you know, whatever it is goes out of business and they've lost that.
And that ties into your email too, right? Because if one of the things you can do in an email is say, so this happened. Like, it's okay to say, this terrible thing happened, because like I did a post in my challenge group talking about when my wife lost her job in April, and I didn't sell anything in that post because it was after my course was back open. I didn't feel comfortable saying anything like that, but I shared it, and it was just their outpouring of support, but also people sharing their own stories of how the pandemic had affected their family. And I thought that was an awesome kind of community coming together moment. Even if it was just moral support, there's something to be said about moral support.
Yeah. And it is kind of the nature of the indie personality to want to do it all yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's okay to be part of a community, and part of being a part of a community is giving and accepting help.
Yeah, you are allowed. And it's not a handout. It's the community supporting the community.
Right.
Oh. All right. Good stuff here. This is a good show. I feel like today's episode is 40% better than normal.
All right. 40% gooder.
40% gooder, but just this episode. All right, let's go into number two.
Number two.
Never too late. Latest episode of the Six Figure Author Podcast asks the question, is it too late to break out as a new author in 2020? The cast says no, and offered up a checklist of what they'd do if they were starting from scratch. Lindsay Baroker said, quote, I'd pick a genre I'm interested in writing that is also solidly a less competitive Amazon category, end quote. Also scope out tropes that are popular before plotting things out. Plan to write the first three novels before releasing anything. Write a bonus story that readers of the first book will be dying to read. Make it a newsletter exclusive. Baroker put this list and more to the test when she launched her secret pen name a few years ago with great success. For details of her new author launch and ad strategy, listen to the latest podcast episode or visit the blog post for the list. I love the sentiment here, because I'm always saying, I think I've seen a post about this very recently. In 3 years, we'll be talking about that success story that started writing 3 years ago.
That started absolutely.
In November 2020. So it's absolutely not too late. It doesn't mean it's not going to be a crap ton of work, though.
Yeah, that's true. But no, there's still avenues. And Even knows what breakout success actually means, right? That's a very loose term, but there's still plenty of avenues to walk down to find the success that brings you fulfillment in this industry. I do believe that.
Yeah. I like that this list, I'm checking out the list. It really goes in kind of step-by-step order, which is nice. It's very sequential. So I would definitely check it out. And guess what? Like, let's say you're an author who's been around the block, but you have not reached whatever your own goal of success is. You could take the knowledge you have and kind of start over in a way, but you're so much farther ahead than other people starting right now because you know so much. Like, it's okay, as my old art teacher used to say, erase it all. It wasn't any good to begin with. By which I hope he meant that when you're doing it the second time, you'll have kind of an idea of what went right and what didn't go right the first time.
Absolutely. And the arrow of time only moves in one direction. So even if you feel like you're going back, you're never going back. You're always farther along than you were before, even if you're quote unquote starting over, because you've gained things along the way. So exactly what you're saying is you can start over. I mean, you haven't had the success you want. Okay, start a brand new series and do this one right. No one's going to check out this series and go, oh, but he has these other books that don't sell, so I guess I'm not going to read this one. Nobody is going to do that. So you can always start with the knowledge that you have and make it better. And, you know, it's just, it's all good. And if you're just starting out, it's probably a little bit harder to have the sort of like, you know, hit a gold mine, just strike gold than it was, you know, in 2012 or whatever. But it's still a lot easier to build a career here in 5 years in indie publishing than it is in most industries.
Absolutely true. I love that arrow of timeline. That was, you used your wisdom already, Claire.
Dang, I'm all tapped out.
I know, there's none left. I was tapped out episodes ago. All right, let's go into number one, and it's all to you.
And now the number one top five news item.
Finally, we can relate. KDP is handing over control of series to authors, says author E.M. Foner in posts shared with the show and in the six-figure authors Facebook group. No longer will authors have to pick up the phone and call Amazon to get their books collected into a series page. Instead, just visit your KDP bookshelf where you'll see your new series option. Quote, we updated the series experience to make managing and publishing a series detail page easier, says the updated KDP help topic on series. In addition, they are also adding support for unordered series and for books that are related by setting or character and can be read in any order. An unordered series isn't numbered, and books are displayed in the order they appear on your series management page. Related content, which is related to the main series, such as novellas, prequels, or short stories, is also now supported on series pages. In a related note, it also appears you can run Amazon ads directly to your series page. This is exciting.
Big news.
I know.
Finally.
This is the biggest news around, folks.
This is news. There's no news as big as this news.
So why it's
today,
the number one story, baby.
Of the world. I just created my first series ad. It was interesting, I think, because I had not set up a series page for my existing series. So it kind of showed up weird. It was like, no price information found. I'm like, okay, well, I'm still picking it. And I was like, well, if I didn't do it right, Amazon will reject it. And they just sent it through. I just got the email. So don't worry if you see something about an existing series not being able to run an ad to it. It does appear as though that still works, but this is pretty big for people who write in a series. And I know a lot of authors do, especially those who maybe weren't linear, maybe weren't, there's 2.5 novella kind of thing. This is an opportunity to go back and make some much needed changes and not have to just pester KDP or Author Central to do it. As an author, Claire, with multiple series, how do you think you'll take advantage of these new features?
Every which way, Brian. I'm very excited. Yeah, I mean, I was clicking around it earlier this morning, found this. I had stumbled upon it because I hadn't been on my Amazon page in a couple of days. And it was very exciting because you know, you can have stuff like these novellas that are these side things. Maybe it was your reader magnet for a while, but you have a new one and you don't really know how to get it to appear on the page and you don't want it to be a part of the series. You can now change that super easy. And that's huge. And then being able to run Amazon ads directly to your series page is pretty sweet.
Yeah.
I have not started any of those, but I mean, I have sponsored brand ads on the Advantage Ads platform. And those usually work pretty well. So I imagine that the Amazon ads directly to series pages is going to work pretty well too.
It'll open things up. Like obviously if you were able to do that with sponsored brands, that might muddy those waters a little bit, but it's definitely really exciting. The possibility that 5-10 episodes ago, we talked about using like a free books, a bargain booksy or a free booksy series promotion. And I know there's now a couple of the 99 cent discount sites that offer a product like that. Imagine that you did that plus running ads to Book One, plus running ads to your series page through Amazon advertising. It gives you, like, maybe Facebook ads could be in the mix. BookBub ads could be in the mix. We're now getting to the point that an author with a longer series who used to just have the ability, I'll do a discount and then I'll discount it again next quarter. It almost doubles the number of promotional opportunities you have with a series. And that's huge. That
yes.
could make a huge difference.
And we love the one click buy all feature on the series page. That is delicious. So I'm excited for people, even if it was just a little less hassle to get your series page up, that is worth it. That is good news in tough times.
I do love a little bit of good news. So awesome. Well, I'm so happy we got to share some good tips today. I feel really strongly about today's episode. Felt good. I'm going to do the interview after, like, oh yeah, well, Claire just really brought her A game and I was feeling good. Like, I've been rehabbing. This would be that kind of episode. Is there anything other than the series page we should talk about for a question of the week? It seems like that's the big story here.
Yeah, I'm down with the series page.
Cool. So how will you take advantage of the new series page feature and the ability to run Amazon ads to that series page? What will be your first step?
That sounds good. I hope it gets real weird in the comments section.
Well, I'm going to make a series for all of my different genre books.
The series is just me. I am the series. We're going to tie all of the series together.
I am series. As far as wisdom today, here's what I'm going to say. If you hear this news of the series, but you're working on something else already, that you have a plan for, that you're excited about, don't immediately drop everything to do this new shiny thing. Stick with what your plan is, see it through, and then set aside time in January 2021 or February 2021 or sometime down the line to work on this. You don't always have to have first mover advantage and be the first person out of the gate with everything. Sometimes it's better to just finish what you have started.
Absolutely. That's great advice. There are so many shiny things in this industry.
So many.
Yeah. So some of them are fool's gold. Some of them are, I don't know, knives.
But made out of gold.
Golden knives.
Yeah.
I'm really contributing to this wisdom, aren't I?
So well. I had so much fun, and Claire, I'm glad we get to do a webinar, which will be 8 days from the day this episode is released. We will have a webinar on writing craft, and we'll have the links. We'll share that all out. And if you're signed up to my list, you'll definitely get 2 to 3 emails about it. So that'll be on Thursday, November 12th. Anything people should expect, Claire, since we just started planning this before this episode?
Well, I will say that when I personally hear that something's about writing craft, I want to like snore as loud as my dog is snoring next to me right now. So it's more about like how to really have fun with your story and create like a solid foundation so that you can play real hard in your story and have it turn out great.
I was doing a terrible job of marketing our webinar. But
no, I mean, that's what people call it, writing craft. I've just been, I guess, like traumatized by it or something.
Any last things you want to share?
Nope.
Great.
I hope everyone's having a great week.
I hope that no matter what has happened in your world this week that next week is either just as great or better than what you feel currently? Anywho, for H. Claire Taylor, I'm Brian Cohen. Thank you for listening. Have a great week of book selling, and we will talk to you next time. Thanks again.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Book Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy book selling.